Show him your appreciation, please.
Well, I don't expect to get paid before I do anything, so. But anyway, thank you. You want a story? Hang on a minute, and let me tell you about Beezer Bennett. Now, Beezer was a cowman many years ago. How he got the name Beezer, I don't know. He surely was a character, kind of like Bone Mazel, and something of a legend, just like William Tell. Now, there's another fella who's important to this story, and that's Beezer's saddle partner, old Porky Corley. The pair worked for Likes Brothers way back in the day, when drinking on the job was the cow hunter way. In fact, Beezer could ride into a hammock as sober as a saint and come out the other side drunk as a haint. This feat was simple, as you could see, because Beezer had a bottle in nearly every tree. They liked their liquor, did he and Porky Corley, which brings to mind a drinking story. Off to Arcadia went this intrepid pair, drinking shine that would curl your hair. They had 'em a time, painted the town, then headed for the bunkhouse, drunk as Cooter Brown. Well, they was traveling along, feeling no pain, when they had 'em a flat, the motorist's bane. Well, they stumbled out, three sheets to the wind, fixed their flat, and then went on again. Well, they drove and drove, the night wore on. Before they knew it, it was coming on dawn. Well, they looked at each other. They should have been there, back at the bunkhouse instead of nowhere. But they kept driving, passing the Who Hit John, when Porky says to Beezer, "What's going on?" Beezer says, "I don't know. We're way past town." Porky looked out the window. "Dang it, Beezer, you didn't let the jack down." And that's a true story, too. Everybody in our part of the woods have got their own favorite, you know, Beezer Bennett story. Most you can't tell in mixed company, but my granddaddy loved that story because that one actually happened. He used to work with Beezer and Porky, and they were like that. But the funny thing is, Florida is the first state that had the cattle ranching culture because of the Spanish colonial influence. Yet, for some strange reason, we always get left out of the history books because I guess we didn't dress as flashy as our Western counterparts. Most of the old pictures I've seen of the old timers, they look like sharecroppers more than cowboys, but it don't make the clothes don't make the man, they just make him look a little bit better. But I read a poem that was written by Wallace McCrae, which was he's a heck of a cowboy poet. I think he's from out there in Montana, but he had a line that said, "The West, where the real cowboys dwell," and that got my dander up, and so I had a poem written in 5 minutes, which is kind of like a rebuttal, called It Takes a Cowman. Oh, the West, where the true cowboys dwell. Well, I'm from Florida, and it's her story I'll tell. I've seen the West, and sure, it's rough. But let those cowboys come down here and see if they're tough enough. To work all day in sugar sand cow pens, the heat and humidity hot enough to purge sins, or fight mosquitoes and hordes thick enough to kill cattle, or race breakneck through a hammock and try to stay in a saddle. I've heard working cows out in Texas can get harsh, but let's see a cowpuncher get a hair dick out of Dooley Marsh, where the cat claw vines rip at you riding on your horse, where risking life and limb is just a matter of course. The Nevada buckaroo on the high desert all day wouldn't stand much of a chance chasing cows in the Callaway. Down here, he'd have, where the sawgrass is taller than a 6-foot man, he'd have to relearn everything to make a hand. And those mountain country cowboys with their highlands so grand would be at a loss in our wet and wild hammock land. Down here, we depend more on cur cow dogs, not roping ability. And a man without a good cow dog, well, he sure has our pity. Let's see those western cowboys without a fence in sight take 300 head through a hammock and keep them bunched tight. It don't take a GED to work cattle on the plains, even if there ain't the use of penning lanes. Well, I'm sick and tired of folks thinking Florida ain't nothing but beaches and sunshine and that Mickey Mouse nut. Florida had ranches long for old Mexico, and it's time all the Johnny-come-latelys know that Florida was and still is prime cattle land. That we ain't all for just sunshine, beaches, or sand. That if you took a hammock and Piney Woods cow hunter from here, He could work on the plains in the West with no fear. A cowboy might can work out West and make a hand, but in Florida, by gum, it takes a cow man. Excuse me. We don't rope as much as they used to back during the screwworms and the fever tick eradication program, just because we don't have much of a need to. Plus, one of the most stressful things you can do to a cow is rope her, because that's, you know, stressing her out, choking her down. It's hard on the horse, it's hard on you, it's hard on the cow. It's best if you don't have to do it. However, when it comes time to rope and choke, ain't a cowboy alive that ain't ready to jerk down his rope. Thank you. Appreciate that. But because we don't get to rope very much, it turns into a competition when we get to rope. Because it's a competition where we ride to put our ropes on cattle that hide. When out from a palmetto patch they run, quarter is given to nary a one. While through the hammocks dashing and flew flag pond splashing, it's nip and tuck, dodge and duck. Through palmetto flats like a steeplechase, lighter snags all over the place. It's rope or wreck. What the heck? You'll feel good once it quits hurting, if you live, of that I'm certain. It's like the Derby when we give chase, because after a cow, it's a horse race. You better have a pony that can run if you expect to catch you one. Yes, sir, your trusty steed, well, he had better feel the need for speed. And that's because there's two of the crew after the same critter as you. And don't miss a chance to throw, because the others will take it, or didn't you know? And about the time you throw your snare, well, he ducks off and you catch air. From behind you they'll swoop while you build a second loop. With a laugh they'll race by while you build on the fly. Directly someone will snare the beast. You missed, but what a rush at least. He'll sunfish and lunge, try to catch a horse. Gotta mind your slack, of course. If the rope gets in the way, you'll be in a bind and ruin your day. To help, someone will throw their snare, and then you take him to a tree somewhere. We're unconcerned with losing our prey, because we don't dally the Western way. To the saddle horn we tie, because this is the motto we live by. Go for broke, or rope or choke. When we catch him, we mean to keep him, and whatever comes with him. I remember one time my brother had played a prank on a fellow we used to work with. He had taken a little piece of feed string and darkened it where it blended in with the color of his rope, and then tied the eye of his rope back to the other coals. That day they were driving cows and a bull jumped out from the bunch, and he went to lay to it to rope it, and he couldn't figure out what in the world was going on with his rope. He started looking at it and he's starting to flop over, but it's not spreading out. By the time his brother Marcus come by just cackling and went up there and caught the bull first. Because everybody wants to catch the bull first. It's easiest to be the first man with the rope on the cow. Because whenever you're the first man on the cow, then you're over with. You don't have to worry about it. You just got to sit there and hold him. If you're trying to assist, that's where it gets aggravating. Because that cow is going round and round and round and back and forth and snatch and jerk. And you're trying to get a rope on him. So we always want to be the first one to catch him. Plus, there's the bragging rights. I got him. My horse is faster than you. But my granddad was telling me many times of how things used to be. Because, see, when I was a youngin', rather than go outside and play, I'd stay inside with my granddad and uncles to hear what they had to say. Uncle Dwayne would start it with talk of cow work the day before. Of some old Bremer cow that had caught him and left him feeling kind of sore. Uncle Darrell would speak up with a tale of his own, like the time the wild hog that he'd caught cut him to the bone. Then the talk would switch to cow dogs, and they'd seen the best around, and they amazed that no matter how broke up the dogs were, they'd always seem to raise up from the ground. Or maybe Uncle Gene would tell how he used to bail off onto a cow. Out in the woods, he was that crazy, because to rope, he never learned how. And then Granddad would start to tell of events of years ago, back when Florida was nothing but swamps and cattle, of days that I'll never know. Of cow hunting out in the scrub, of the tough men and the tougher horses, of the days when he was young, and crossing cattle over river courses. He tell of cattle that were wild as the Florida deer. Back then, you had to be sly as a panther to catch them in the clear. For if the cattle saw you, well, buddy, you'd best be ready to ride to catch them before they hit a hammock, because the hammocks could tear your hide. And then he'd get quiet, his soul full of tears, remembering his comrades who've been dead for years and the wild times they all had had. He told me how much fun it was, not a science like today, but he'll not quit, although he's old, hunting cows the Florida way. And he didn't. He was working cows the day he died. My Uncle Daryl, oh, got 5 minutes? Okay. Scratch that. They really couldn't believe it, although he seemed sincere, this New York Yankee who come to work one year. He grew up with Westerns, watching Gene and Roy. Had told him all his life he wanted to be a cowboy. He knew of Del Vecchio, the bull rider from the Bronx. He listened to country music and had gone to honky-tonks. From an online auction, he'd bought a used saddle and 2 or 3 books on the different breeds of cattle. Why he'd come to Florida, no one could rightly say. They figured he'd have headed west to learn the cowboy way. He told them all he wanted work of his lifelong dream to ride the range as part of a cattle-gathering team. The foreman was dubious. It was calving season. Normally, to hire a new man, he wouldn't see a reason. But the Yankee was in luck, because Bill had just quit, and the foreman had no choice but to see if he would fit. He couldn't use a whip, and he didn't know how to rope. After hours of teaching, the cow crew gave up hope. They asked if he could ride, and the Yankee said, "Of course." And so he sat astraddle of a thoroughly broken horse. Their cracker speech was a foreign tongue to his pale northern ears, and his Queensboro language pattern was subject to taunts and jeers. Of course he understood English. This Yankee wasn't dense, but in the air between them there existed a verbal fence. The foreman took him on his round and, at a hammock's edge, instructed him to ride south to a palmetto ledge, for him to ride through it and to cut through the cabbage trees, skirting through some cypress, and to watch out for the knees. West from the cypress, ride to the pine head, watch for the ditch lizard, your horse don't like the dead. There's a hammock near the cow pens, we'll meet the other side. The cow crew foreman left him there, and the Yankee started his ride. The terms the boss had used concerned the Yankee some. He worried about falling off when to the ledge he'd come. Abruptly stepping off an edge vexed his fearful soul. His horse scared him half to death as he stepped into a bull hole. As he rode along further, there was blowing a cool breeze, and he contemplated thoroughly what kind of cabbage grew in trees. Though he didn't know it, he come through where the foreman said, and searched the area expectantly to see a giant head. An ancient sight, a totem pole, he expected to behold, like something off of Easter Island, a Seminole relic of old. He rode into a stand of pine, but never saw the head. He come upon a cattle trail and followed where it led. Ditch lizard puzzled the man. He thought to ask them later, while ruminating upon this term, he never saw the gator. His horse's nose caught the stench and launched him in the air. He impacted swiftly with the earth, his arm and prickly pear. A string of cuss words left his mouth. Poetically, it seemed, the art of such vulgarity has every sailor dreamed. Concluding his obscenities, he retrieved the final spine as Gopher come upon the scene, returning Yank's equine. The Yankee mounted sheepishly and continued on his way, muddled still by the terms, his thoughts in disarray. Bewildered though he was sure he'd recognize a hammock hanging in the air between the earth and skies. But he saw no hammock, just some trees and cattle all astir, and round the cows he plainly seed where the cowmen were. When Yank joined them round the herd, Jim saw a pregnant cow. She had tried to calve. Hooves were out. She needed helping now. Well, Gopher roped and choked her. Jim went to tail her down. And it was here that what occurred gave the Yank renown. A simple word assailed his ears. He didn't have to fake. He understood implicitly its meaning, no mistake. Jim had hollered, "Mug the cow!" The Yankee pulled his knife, looked at her with gritted teeth, "Your wallet or your life?" Thank you.